Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco's plan to close down shelter-in-place hotels that have been protecting elderly and vulnerable homeless people during the pandemic would force up to 500 of them to move out by the end of the year. The timing couldn't be worse, according to advocates who point to surging coronavirus infection rates, reduced capacity at shelters, and winter weather. San Francisco supervisors will meet this morning and plan to announce legislation to prevent the closures. Earlier this week, California announced additional funding for these programs, but in many counties, people have already been moved out of the hotels. We'll get the latest. That's next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Programs that temporarily house elderly and vulnerable homeless people in hotel rooms during the pandemic got a boost earlier this week when Governor Newsom announced an additional $62 million in funding. But finding permanent housing for these individuals remains challenging. San Francisco had plans to begin shutting down the first 7 of 29 shelter-in-place hotels by December 21st, but city supervisors are meeting today to draft legislation to prevent the closures. Other counties, such as Marin, have already moved nearly everyone out of their hotels. Meanwhile, Bay Area suburbs like Novato and Milpitas are pushing back against plans to convert hotels into permanent supportive housing. In this hour, we're going to get an update on programs to help the homeless during the pandemic and what's being done to ensure permanent solutions. Joining us is KQED Housing Affordability Reporter Molly Solomon. And good morning, Molly.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Margot Cushell with us. And Margot Cushell is director of the UCSF Center for Vulnerable Populations, director of the UCSF Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative, and also professor of medicine in the Division of General Internal Medicine at San Francisco General Hospital. And welcome, Dr. Cushell.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Molly Solomon, let me begin with you. And let's begin by talking about these are room key hotels that are shutting down in San Francisco, Alameda, and Marin, really. A lot to do with FEMA money running out, because that's 75% of essentially the revenue that's coming in. But $62 million has been put forth by the governor now, put forward to keep things going. Where do we stand and what's going to happen today in the supervisorial meeting?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the supervisors propose and where that ends up going. I'm interested to see, you know, if this is a resolution, if this is an ordinance, and what kind of power they could have to push the city to extend these hotels beyond, you know, the wind down date, which is coming up December 21st. And, you know, it's interesting because the Project Room Key hotels were really seen as a temporary emergency move to house people quickly at a time when their health is at risk, especially, like you said, people that are medically vulnerable, people that are older and, you know, might be more susceptible to catching something like coronavirus. Now we're sort of at the stage where how can we make this permanent? A lot of that is coming from funding that Governor Newsom is pushing through these Project Home Key grants, which is essentially, you know, giving different cities and counties, you know, millions of dollars in money to actually purchase some of this temporary housing where people have been housed in hotels and potentially create permanent supportive housing, you know, that could be permanent forever.
In fact, there is a kind of plan in the works. What stage is that at? Do we know, Molly, in terms of moving from this room key to what is described as home key, a project that would mean more permanent housing?
Yeah, you know, over $800 million has been dispersed through this Project Home Key. They've been doling out grants, you know, over the last month or so to different cities and counties. And the thing with, you know, the Home Key money is that it's coming from the federal government. It's tied to CARES Act money. And the catch there is they've got to spend it by the end of the year. So there's an expiration date to that money, which is why all of this is moving so quickly. You know, cities and counties have to actually purchase these buildings with those dollars and make the deals happen very, very quickly. You know, we're now mid-November And, you know, cities and counties have to spend millions of dollars and actually purchase these hotels. Some of them are tiny homes. You know, there's a big variety and diversity on what these projects have been, you know, that have been approved that we've seen so far. You know, at the same time, cities and counties are concerned that, you know, that 75% reimbursement that's coming from FEMA that's helping a lot of these hotels stay open, you know, they don't know when that's going to run out. You know, right now that's sort of on a month to month basis. And I think, you know, look at a city like San Francisco, it's a lot more expensive. They're serving a very large population of homeless people already. And I think there's a fear that, you know, are they going to get, you know, caught off guard if that money is going to get shut down in a month. So I think that's what you're seeing right now is a concern of weighing when to start to wind down these programs and when some of the home key hotels, the more permanent housing, could be available.
Well, it's costing the city about $15 to $18 million a month, but there's money from Proposition C, isn't there?
There is, and I think it's still unclear how that could be doled out into this type of program and how much money that could actually bring forward. And I think that's what the city's wrestling right now is, you know, what different funding sources can we have to keep this going? And, you know, the reason why it's so expensive, or part of the reason why, is that it's not just the cost of the room that cities are paying for. There's a lot of wraparound services that they have to pay for as well. You know, in San Francisco, Abigail Stewart Kahn, the, you know, interim director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, she said it costs about $260 a night to house people in these hotel rooms because they've got to pay for three meals a day. There's laundry service. A lot of times there's security and case managers and housing coordinators that they're also paying to service some of the people that are in these hotels. So there are costs here that are significant.
And we should mention there's certainly a good deal of hope that more revenue will come in under the Biden-Harris administration, and also that the legislature will provide more revenue. The hope is that HomeKey will get more funding when it reconvenes. That is, when the legislature reconvenes in January. We're talking with Molly Solomon, housing affordability reporter for KQED News. And let me bring Dr. Margot Kuschel into this. And Dr. Kuschel, there is a sense that housing is vital for health, and I want you to talk about that link, especially the need for affordable housing being integral to health and just how vital it is.
Absolutely. You know, I think, as I like to say, housing is the best medicine, that what we know is when people don't have housing, everything else falls apart. And it becomes extremely, extremely dangerous for their health. That has always been true. And I think that the COVID pandemic made it even more obvious and more true how very dangerous it was to be without housing, how dangerous it is to be in inadequate or very crowded housing, which in some ways has fueled this pandemic. So I think COVID really brought home something that we as healthcare providers have always known, is that it is very hard for people to be healthy, almost impossible if they're not housed.
And you've, I think, been involved in this, at least attempt to ameliorate problems of homelessness for quite a while now. And how would you gauge the success of Project HomeKey, particularly in light of what you've seen and what you've experienced, the kind of outcomes that people have had from being indoors?
Yeah, I mean, Project HomeKey has really been in for the people it reached an amazing success. It happened really quickly at a very difficult time when governments and public were dealing with the effects of the pandemic. It was really amazing to see how quickly it came together. And I think in some ways it's proof of concept that when we really want to, we can get a whole lot of people indoors to safety really quickly. We've seen just incredible outcomes. We've seen people who are really struggling, because remember, HomeKey was targeted to the people who were the frailest, the sickest, oldest people who we were most concerned if they got COVID, which people who were homeless were at very high risk of getting, would do the most poorly, would be wind up in the hospital or even die. And what we've seen is very little to COVID transmission in this population because of it. And in fact, huge improvements in other outcomes. People have been, who had opioid use disorders, were able to be engaged in treatment. People had chronic diseases, which have been very difficult to manage, suddenly getting managed. People getting treatment for cancers, for diabetes, and for other serious illnesses. So it's been a huge success for those lucky enough to come indoors.
Counties, however, really still need to find long-term housing solutions, and they're scrambling to do so. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about the likelihood of something really coming down the pike here that's going to be viable.
I mean, absolutely. You know, Roomkey has housed up to about 22,000 people across the state, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 in the Bay Area. And it's a little frightening to think what will happen if the resources don't come through. I think Homekey is a really good start. It has created about 6,000 units across the state. And as Molly mentioned, the money needs to be spent quickly, which means the units are coming on board quickly. In many places, they'll be used as interim housing while they get converted to be permanent housing. But I think we're facing a major upstream force, which is even though Roomkey has been so successful, it was only a tiny percentage of the 151,000 people who are homeless each night in California. And I think we have huge fears that because of the economic disruptions of the pandemic, that as the current eviction moratoria, which are in place, is sort of a patchwork of local, state, and federal moratoria, we could see huge increases in homelessness. So I think really important that we get all funds that we can, really important that we don't take people who are currently in these Roomkey hotels and have them wind up on the street. That would be going backwards. And really important that we do everything we can at every level of government to increase our supply of deeply affordable housing.
Well, that's the problem, though. I mean, we really don't have the housing stock or the supply. We need to increase it. But we also have more, just kind of piggybacking on what you just said, more of an influx coming into the city, for example, San Francisco, don't we?
Well, I think what we're worried about is not so much people flooding in. That is everyone's concern that always happens. It's never really borne out by the data. And most people who are homeless are homeless where they became homeless. And that's true as well in San Francisco. But what we are concerned about is with so many people losing income, losing work, behind in their rent. Right now, there are these eviction moratorium, meaning people are not allowed to be evicted, but it didn't pay their back rent. And if we don't get rent relief, either from the state or hopefully from the federal government, we worry about large increases in homelessness from people who have lost their jobs, have lost their income, and are now desperately behind in their rent.
Talking about shelter-in-place programs for Bay Area homeless individuals with Margot Cushell, she's director of the UCSF Center for Vulnerable Populations and directs the UCSF Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative, and is professor of medicine in the Division of General Internal Medicine at SF General Hospital. And Molly Solomon is with us, housing affordability reporter for KQED News. We'll be talking with others, and we want to talk with you. We want to not only hear questions you may have about protecting homeless individuals during this pandemic, but also comments and thoughts that you may have as well. You can give us a call now. I invite you to do that. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so please feel free to be part of the program, and you can call us now. Again, the number, 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. We're going to go to a quick break here for about a minute. When we come back, we're going to meet Rob Strahan, who's Program Director of Catholic Charities. We're going to talk about more of what's going on, particularly outside of San Francisco as well. A lot of this comes down to problems and concerns about NIMBYism, about not in my backyard. And even though there are some hotels that have tried to move toward at least accommodating homeless people, there's been a good deal of resistance. We'll hear more about that when we return. Stay tuned, and please feel free again to join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about shelter-in-place programs for Bay Area homeless individuals. And I said I wanted to bring Rob Strahan into this discussion. He's Program Director at Catholic Charities. And Rob, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Great. Thank you for having me on the program.
I guess the place I'd like to begin with you is to talk about some of the obstacles with this program, particularly in terms of what comes under that broad rubric or category of NIMBYism, concern about rise in crime rates, concern about lower property values. These are the kinds of things that inevitably come up when there's an attempt to provide shelter for people who are homeless. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that in a broad way, but also about what happened over in Marin, because it's exemplary in many ways in Marin in Novato. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So Catholic Charities operates several shelter-in-place hotels under Project Roomkey, one in San Francisco for families and two previously in Marin, one for families and one for individuals. And as part of the conversion over to Project Homekey, the opening of a single adult in Puerto Madera, and then the attempt to open a family site in Novato. And yes, there was some resistance by the residents of Novato around opening a site in Novato, particularly concerns around increased crime, also around loss of property values, local businesses in the area, possibly not being able to attract folks to eat there or shop in their local areas. And again, it was just concerns around that. Also, there were concerns around the rush of passing this through very quickly in order to meet the deadlines imposed by the state.
So what happened, for example, with respect to the Inn Marin Hotel in Novato? Can you describe actually where we're at on that?
So the Inn Marin was to be established as a 72-room family shelter to be opened up as a semi-permanent shelter for families. And during city council meetings, several of which I was online with, the concern was particularly around the rush of getting it done, going through some more studies around potential crime or around potential decreases in property value. There was a great deal of support on the other side as well, though, that residents of Novato were supporting the opening of that particular shelter and the need to have it, especially during COVID, and the concerns about if the location isn't opened, what would be the consequences of that? What would happen to those families who are homeless, and where would they end up going?
Understandable. It was also, though, my understanding, Rob, that there was a good deal of concern over not enough vetting and circumventing land use in Novato. And with respect to both Corte Madera and Milpitas, there was a sense of wanting more community meetings, wanting more community input, too. That became an issue.
Yeah, that definitely was an issue. Again, the deadline in order to obtain properties under the Project Homekey on this round was fairly quick. And there, again, was concerns that there wasn't enough vetting or there wasn't enough community input as to maybe specifically a location. It may have been that Marin Inn wasn't the ideal spot, and maybe there was another location that would have been better served and maybe more community input as to where that might be.
And I think you may disagree with what Dr. Cushell said earlier. I'd like to get you to talk about this, about people coming from across the country to this region and concern about numbers growing. You see that as not necessarily a myth, but a reality?
It is a reality. As one of the other programs, I oversee several programs within Catholic Charities, including a street outreach program in San Francisco, as well as two access points for families, which is through the coordinated entry system in San Francisco, where families come to when they're first wanting to get services for their homeless situation. And we have definitely seen an increase in our access points, not only over the phone, but in person, of families, even individuals who are coming in and stating they're coming from out of county, out of state, that they're looking for services. They have indicated that they've seen information on television or through the news about services that are available here in San Francisco that they might not be able to get in their own communities. But also they have family and friends who live here and have come here and maybe had a situation where they could stay with family or friends for a little while, but then that situation turned and then they became homeless.
Talking to Rob Strahan, who's program director at Catholic Charities. Also, Rob, you're pretty concerned about Bay Area residents losing jobs and homes being lost, rent going up. Your thoughts before we bring our callers aboard here.
Sure. I'm very concerned about sort of what I call the new homeless, and that is the homelessness we're going to experience as maybe after shelter in place is lifted or after rent moratoriums are lifted, and families and individuals who aren't going to be able to afford even paying back rents, even with the assistance through government programs, or being able to sustain their current rents because they don't have employment to support those rents. And so I anticipate that we're going to be seeing a fairly large surge of a new set of homeless families and individuals coming through our systems.
After the moratorium is lifted, I believe, after that's lifted, you're going to there's going to be a new wave of homeless, yeah.
Absolutely, and I mean, we're seeing it even now. We're seeing families and individuals who are coming in who are maybe aren't in a certain sort of a standard or common lease agreement with a landlord, who are being asked to leave their current situations.
We also seeing more undocumented needing housing options or looking for housing, particularly given the fact that many of them are out of work now and can't find any work?
Oh, yes, definitely. Two of my offices are located in the Bayview District and in the Mission District of San Francisco. And we are certainly seeing undocumented families who are coming in who, again, don't have traditional leases and maybe subletting or paying rent to a friend or a family member. And they're losing their housing and they may not be eligible under current rental assistance programs and don't really know what to do at this point.
Again, we're talking about shelter-in-place programs for Bay Area homeless. And let me bring some callers on. Let me go to Leslie first in Bolinas. Leslie, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is a general question about homelessness. And it is, even before this crisis, I've always wondered what the limit is to the number of homeless people a community should be, I don't want to use the word obligated. I mean, I think there's an ethical obligation, but what's the limit to the number of people a town or a city should be required to house?
You want to talk about ceilings, Molly Solomon, in terms of communities with homeless, with respect to homeless?
You know, it's interesting. So like kind of the threshold that a city could bear for homeless individuals, is that the question? I mean, in some ways, I feel like probably Dr. Margot Kuchel is the expert on this. Maybe you have more expertise on looking at what the data shows and bears out in terms of what the limits are to places like the Bay Area being able to sustain homeless people.
Well, there are, you know, rules in terms of communities with respect to affordable housing. Dr. Kuchel, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately, you know, my answer in some ways should be none. We should have no tolerance for homelessness. Not that we should have no tolerance for homeless people, but that homelessness is really a result of just multiple policy failures that, of course, disproportionately affect Black and Brown people. But there is no, it's not like you reach a certain point and no homeless people are allowed to lose their homes anymore. I know it can feel like people are flooding into areas, but of course, what areas never see are the people flooding out. And so in most places, 70 to 80% of people who experience homelessness come from that area or surrounding. It is true that people often leave the suburbs and come into central cities because there are more resources in the central cities. And frankly, people don't want to starve to death. But what we don't see in the Bay Area are all the poor people who have left the Bay Area to seek housing. And so I wish I could tell you that there were some threshold, but remember, these are not creatures from Mars. people experiencing homelessness are our neighbors. They are our community members, and they are community members who no longer have homes. So I think perhaps the question should be, what is our responsibility as communities to create and sustain housing that's affordable to the lowest income renters? Because that's really what we're talking about here.
And that's a question that each community has to answer in its own right. I'm looking at a tweet here from a listener named Kristen who says, demographics of people in the hotels are disproportionately people of color and seniors, and a person usually has to be homeless in San Francisco for as many as 20 years to qualify for permanent supportive housing. It's insane, and there's one of the wealthiest cities in the world. Let's find out about what's going on now. I had mentioned there's a Board of Supervisors meeting that's happening while we're speaking here. Molly, what can you tell us?
Yeah, you know, we've got one of our reporters, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He's been watching the supervisors meeting now. He does have a couple things to say there. It's interesting. They're basically co-sponsoring legislation to stop what they're calling evictions from these hotels, saying that, you know, where are these people going to go if these hotel programs are shut down? You know, the earliest phase that they're saying would mean that 500 people would be leaving these hotel rooms right now, a lot of them medically vulnerable and older. We've got a cut here from San Francisco Supervisor Shalman Walton from this morning's press conference.
We're still in the middle of a major medical crisis. We're also in the middle of extremely cold weather that is here in San Francisco at this point. And it is cruel and highly unusual to be discussing the removal of human beings from SIP hotels with all of these elements. This really amounts to a December 21st eviction out to the street.
That's been a concern all along. Molly, I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that's been a concern all along. Where do these people go, right, for these 500 people? That's been hovering over this from the beginning, since Mayor Breed put it out there. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think since we began this program, there have been a lot of push from advocates, from people that have said, you know, we need to be housing more people than the city is actually currently housing. But, you know, the big question is, where are they going to go? Where are they going to go when this winds down? You know, this city clearly does not have, you know, an inventory of permanent supportive housing to house, you know, the 2,000 plus people that are currently in hotel rooms. And you know, the city has been, you know, it seems like they're maybe reconsidering the timeline that they have right now for the hotels closing, you know, essentially right before the holidays in December, which would be very poor timing. You know, it's the temperatures are dropping. Coronavirus cases are surging right now. It's, you know, at a time when the shelters in the city where some of these people maybe were coming from, those are still at very limited and reduced capacity. And so people could not even go back there and be able to live safely in that congregate shelter environment. So I think that's the big question. That's the big question for the city is, what are they going to provide? And, you know, we've heard different things. There are some short-term and longer-term things that they've provided. You know, there is some permanent supportive housing that they could place people in, but, you know, there's also other things that they're trying to do right now. It seems like there's a flex pool with vouchers and maybe trying to create some sort of negotiations with landlords so that they could place people in the private market, you know, in studios or one bedroom apartments. But, you know, as you know, it's San Francisco. Even if rents have moved a little bit because of the pandemic, it's still extremely expensive to be looking for studios and one bedrooms in the private market in an expensive region like the Bay Area.
And you're hearing anything directly from Mayor Breed's office? Because she's certainly come under fire because of this.
You know, that was a question that a lot of us had when we heard that Governor Newsom had announced, you know, that additional $62 million in grants for counties and cities to basically help keep people housed until maybe some of those home key rooms come on board. And, you know, what we heard back is essentially that, you know, they don't really know yet how much of that $62 million San Francisco specifically is going to get. So it's a little bit hard for them to think, you know, how much this is going to change things for them and how much it's going to impact their timeline. You know, what we've heard so far is just that the mayor's office is evaluating it.
Well, we should mention that we have a pretty good notion of how that pie of $62 million is going to be divided. $35 million is going to go toward rehousing Project Roomkey residents, and then $24 million to prop up the program, allow people to stay in hotels, and then about $3 million is put aside for technical assistance for actually creating rehousing plans. I want to bring Jilly into this discussion. Jilly has actually been staying at a San Francisco Project Roomkey hotel for the past 6 months, and she asked us not to use her full name because of a domestic violence situation. But Jilly Glad to have you with us and welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being with you.
And we appreciate having you. I guess the first question I have for you is, being in a hotel, how does it compare to being, well, in a tent or in a shelter?
It's luxury. It's like really convenient, because when I was on the street and my brother had put up a tent so that I would have somewhere safe, because I was between my dog, my service animal, and I was sleeping between two buildings because the shelter that we were in had closed down. And so at that point, it was like I had quite a ways to go, you know, at least two blocks, about a block and a half maybe, to get to the restroom. There were no showers, and the shower that you did, they finally opened, or I found out about, you could only be there about 10 minutes within the shower. And it was strenuous, but the people in the encampment, they were, you know, decent people, and they kind of looked out for each other. And so I was blessed that Hatim, a friend of mine who also she's a minister, she told me about Hatim. And the gentleman named Melvin at Hatim, he came through. And when they saw me, they said that, well, anyone who had a lung condition, and they were about, you know, in their 60s, they had to be at least 60, a lung condition, and that they would, you know, immediately get them into housing so that they would not be exposed to the virus. So I was blessed to be able to get into a shelter in place, and they were like, it's functioning like a hospital, so they take your temperature, you know, and they make sure that you have 3 squares, you get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And
you're getting care, which is so important. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you here because I'm coming up on a break. Can you stay with us for a minute? I want to ask you about how long you plan to stay there and whether you're going to seek, or what you are hoping to seek in the way of permanent housing. But as I said, we're coming up on a break here. Maybe you can just tell us how long you plan on staying in the hotel before we go to this break in the seconds here.
Okay, well, the hotel will be closing as of the 21st, and when Kristen came through, she was the one who notified us. We're in phase one, and so our hotel will be closing.
Well, I want to find out more about where you're headed in this, and we'll talk to you as we come out of the break. But again, we're talking about shelter-in-place programs for Bay Area homeless individuals, and stay tuned. More up ahead. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late, or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking again about shelter-in-place programs for Bay Area homeless individuals with Margot Kuschel, Molly Solomon, and Rob Strahan. And we were talking before we went to that break with Jilly, who's been staying at a San Francisco Project Roomkey hotel for the past 6 months. And Jilly, just one more question before I let you go here, and that is, what are your plans in terms of permanent housing, or what do you have at least hopeful that will have been?
Well, at this point, what they did was they had several people come from, I guess it was 1138 Howard, and they had us all assessed. And when they assessed us, they told us what we needed. And then they came back. They did, what did they call it? I forgot what they call it. But it was like, you know, they did an assessment of us. And at that point, they actually said they might have some housing for the people here. And so they gave us the places that were available. And at this point, I am, like several of them, are waiting to hear from the buildings whether or not we have the correct documentation to be able to get into the apartment.
So you're a bit in limbo right now, huh?
Well, yes, and they said it would be about a week, but it's supposed to be like an SRO, and yeah. It has its own bathroom. And because of the fact that I had broken my ankle and I will not be walking for at least another 2 or 3 months, then they said that gave me some priority. And so there were several other people here who also got priority, and they have a doctor who comes on site and ECS and the hotel.
Well, I hope not only that your ankle heals, but I hope that you do find a regular roof over your head. And I thank you so much for joining us. It's really been good of you to be with us this time. Thank you.
Well, I'm grateful for the intense team that helped out with the housing. And at this point, I'm not counting chickens, but I am being hopeful.
Yeah, we'll keep that hope alive. And we'll keep some more callers alive here, so to speak. We'll get Lee in as our next caller. Good morning, Lee.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up I was a nurse, a public health nurse in supportive housing, which takes the most complicated medically and otherwise complicated homeless. And I worked there for about seven years. There are incredible people working for the homeless, I have to say that. My big issue is, and it never seems to be addressed much, is the extreme substance abuse and severe mental health issues amongst the people, the homeless people. They would be brought into our buildings. Many of the people I worked with were severe substance abusers. I worked with several predators in these places. Many very medically complicated people. And, you know, just my thing is, when I heard about the $10 million a month spent on the hotels the other day, I kind of freaked out, because I really would love to see Laguna Honda expand 2 more buildings, assisted living, because many of the people in supportive housing are not at the level of housing, the level of care that they need. They really need to be in assisted living, because they're very medically or otherwise fragile. And we have a nurse and case managers in those buildings, and lots of services that come in home support, which means somebody comes in and, you know, cleans and shops and does cooking and so on, and personal care.
Lee, you're bringing up a lot of issues here, and I want to actually flesh them out a bit if I could. Thank you for raising these issues, because they're all important. Rob Strahan, I want to hear back from you on this, particularly some of the concerns that she, it seems to me, is giving voice to here about the need for caseworkers, for one thing, and for people who are providing social services, because you do have a lot of mentally ill and addicted people who are homeless, but also maybe creating a kind of pivot here to converting hotels for permanent housing and where the money should be spent on that score. I think she's suggesting perhaps that we need to reassess.
I think she's absolutely right. The homelessness is a very complex problem, and there's a lot of complexities around people who are homeless. And it includes some that are dealing with substance abuse, mental health, employment, domestic violence, the list goes on. And I think that one of the things we need to be looking at when placing people into permanent supportive housing or rapid rehousing subsidized programs is the services that need to be wrapped around that. Just placing somebody into a room and saying, here's your new place to stay, when they may not have the services they need around even developing budgets, how to grocery shop, how to tend to some medical needs they may have, certainly mental health issues, relapse maybe around substance abuse and need support around that. And so it's very complex, and those wraparound services are very important. and not just placing people in permanent supportive housing or rapid rehousing subsidies and saying, this is it for you. And money needs to go into those services.
And I'm looking at some comments here from listeners. Steve writes, I'm a Novato resident. The situation at the inn at Marin was handled so poorly with little transparency and zero input from residents. The homeless situation in Novato and San Rafael is at critical mass. The area around the inn is already a hangout for drug users and panhandling. Housing 70 homeless in a hotel without proper services and support is a terrible idea. I was a big Newsom supporter, but no longer. And here's Annie, who says, Sonoma is a small city with only 200 homeless, and of those, only about 20 are totally unsheltered. There are no plans for a local winter shelter because the city is using COVID as an excuse. Are there laws preventing churches or community centers from providing winter shelter? Can you help us there, Rob?
Yes. In San Francisco, we do have a winter shelter program that is provided through several churches. My concern is, as we close these SIP hotels at this point with the high COVID rate happening, winter coming on, that we're not going to have those particular enough space in those winter shelters. But definitely here in San Francisco, we do have that. I can't speak for Marin County on what their policies are around doing.
Let me go back to Margot Cushell. And Dr. Cushell, I wonder if you could respond to a tweet from a listener named Aaron who writes, how can San Francisco residents help ensure that people continue to be housed during this critical time? It seems ill-advised and heartless to end access to housing right now. Some thoughts from you.
Sure. I mean, clearly in the middle of a pandemic, it's quite frightening to think that people would be released. You can hear, I was so happy to hear Joey's story, and that there's clearly a lot of good work going on to try to move as many people as possible into permanent housing. I think it's really about being aware of what the issues are that that there is a, you know, the city and the state are facing budgetary issues. They need help, and hopefully that help will come from the federal government, but as well as the city and the state doing everything they can to put resources in the right places. I agree completely that many folks who struggle with substance use and mental health disabilities need supports. Many of those supports are actually fundable through the Medicaid program. It's not easy to set that up, but hopefully that could be set up so that people can get the level of support that they need. But I think really keeping the pressure on our elected officials is important at all levels of government. And I can't say often enough how important the federal government is in this. And obviously the fate of the Senate hangs in the balance right now. And that's very critical. I think also saying yes to housing is another way to support it. I think that the harder it becomes for governments to buy properties, to convert properties, to house people in them, just the more complicated it is to end homelessness. So saying yes to housing, being the people who show up at the meetings and saying, yes, I agree that our homeless neighbors should be housed, is incredibly impactful. And really making sure that we hold our elected officials both understanding the tough straits that they're in, but also holding them accountable to do as much as we can to bring as many resources as we can to this urgent crisis.
And many more emails coming in here. Let me just read a couple of them from listeners. A listener writes, I'm a Novato resident, and I'm very disappointed that the Inn Marin won't be purchased to lodge the homeless. Residents who objected to this purchase are heartless. The lot is big enough that the neighbors would not have the homeless right in their face. Another listener says, the situation accents the need for an accountability commission to oversee the Department of Housing and Homelessness. Why doesn't she want the department to be held accountable like the other departments in the city? She being presumably Mayor Breed. And let's bring another caller on. Leah joins us. Leah or Leah, which is it?
Yes, it's Leah.
Thank you, Leah.
So much.
Morning.
Hi. Morning. I'm the directing attorney for the Shelter Client Advocacy Program. And we provide essentially due process hearings for folks that are being removed from shelters. And that can be anything from a rule violation to something more serious. And I think that, you know, I've been very impressed during this crisis about the shelter providers as well as the shelter, advocates, and this is all based in San Francisco. And there's really a strong community. I think what I've been very concerned about and concerned today, and, obviously I think that it's really important that the supervisors are saying, we cannot close these shelters, is that there continues to be decisions made by what's essentially called a command center that is staffed by folks that weren't necessarily before the pandemic involved with making these decisions. And we've had a lot of trouble of folks who don't understand how this system has been working for the past 30 years and have stepped in and just trying to move things. And I think that the moment where we were in a level of crisis where it's for 30 days, we do what we need to do, is no longer there. We're kind of back to the crisis we were in before COVID with some serious complications, and that you cannot have a congregate setting for people. I mean, we're telling people not to go visit their family members during Thanksgiving, and we are suggesting that we're going to move people back into congregate settings. So I think that, we need to start thinking about, we're in a housing crisis, the same one that we were in the day before COVID-19 pandemic was declared and all of the things we've had to do, and that we need to have a little bit longer view. And one of that has to do with that we've had a grievance policy that creates process for people to make sure that the shelters are following the rules, that advocates, that the folks inside of them are protected, that the staff are protected.
All good points and all appreciated hearing from you, Leah. I want to go back to Molly Solomon to sort of come away from your points with another important element that you've brought up here, and that is the whole idea, Molly, I believe, behind Project HomeKey was not only to provide high-risk people and more vulnerable people with some protection during this COVID crisis, but also decrease the numbers in the shelter where they're congregating, as the caller was suggesting, and protect them in that sense, too. That was really part of the raison d'etre, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the caller, Leah, she brings up a really interesting point that also makes me wonder about the future of shelter in general. And, what kind of congregate shelters are going to look like, in a COVID pandemic world? And is it safe for us to return to that? Could shelter look different now that we've gone through this pandemic or are still going through this pandemic right now? And I think this is, advocates are saying that it's not safe to return to that, at a time when coronavirus cases are surging. In San Francisco, they're still at a very reduced capacity. So, even if we release people from the hotels now, they aren't going to have rooms in shelters. And I think San Francisco has actually said emphatically that none of the people that will be released from these rooms are going to go to emergency shelters in San Francisco. But
we've got about 17% of the state's homeless population in Project Roomkey. So, how much can you really expand that is a troubling question and a vexing question. It's at the heart of our discussion here, especially since we don't know how long this pandemic's going to last.
Exactly. And you think about everything that we've been told from the CDC, from health officials in the state, it's to social distance. I mean, that's pretty difficult to do in a place like a shelter, where those are places where the conditions are, where you are packed into, generally a large room, bunk beds. I mean, it's a place where we've already seen outbreaks in the city of San Francisco. So I think to return to that, especially now or in the near future, before we have any sort of readily available cheap vaccine, could cost lives.
Molly Solomon, again, is housing affordability reporter for KQED News. And Pam is our next caller with some thoughts about a resource for those of you in Alameda County. Pam, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, great. Great to be here. I'm calling as a staff person for 211 Alameda County. I'm a housing coordinator there, and I just wanted to give that resource information to our callers. It's 211 is a phone number. You can call on our phone just as you can call 911 or 511. It provides safety net resources for the community, and it operates 24/7 in multiple languages. In Alameda County, it's unique in that it provides affordable housing resources as well. 211 in Alameda County is the where we transfer and register people for our homeless coordinated system, which provides information on, provides them access to room key, home key, all of the resources that we're discussing today. Understandably, everything is stretched super thin, but it is a way for people to access all the resources. We also provide services, service information. Our operators will tell people about the rental assistance that comes down the pike. That will be available on all cities in Alameda County that we have information, and it's very up to date. We have mental health resources. We have occasional shelter openings. And the big thing we have is affordable housing, which is we have a centralized one-stop shop for all the open waiting lists at a point in time. People can call 211 and get on these information on waiting lists, as well as we have a website called achousingchoices.org, and we work very, very hard to keep that updated with real-time open waiting lists for the county as a centralized place.
That's valuable information for those in Alameda, and I thank you for calling our attention to that. I want to go to a listener comment here and go back, if I may, to you, Margot Cushell, and get a quick response from you to a listener named Annie who says, I see the homeless in Sonoma acting as a family, helping each other and not feeling a need to social distance because they have little contact with sheltered people. What is COVID statistics in the homeless community?
Great. So we've seen within shelters across the country, including in San Francisco, some terrible outbreaks for the reasons that Molly said, very hard to social distance. The good news is what we found from testing large numbers of people experiencing homelessness, that people were actually practicing social distancing as best they could, where there was actually a high amount of mask wearing, and we haven't seen as much transmission in unsheltered populations, in part because people really were doing the best that they could to wear masks, social distance, keep within a family unit, and a little bit of luck. And we certainly, I think the role that Project Roomkey has played in keeping the rates low can't be overestimated, that by removing the highest risk people from the population really has saved a lot of lives. So I think that people who experience homelessness are doing the best that they can to stay as safe as possible during these very dangerous and harrowing times.
And I certainly hope that will continue to be the case, and we will continue to follow this subject and this topic because it is of great concern to so many of you. And thank you, Molly Solomon. Thank you, Margot Cushell. And thank you, Rob Strahan. And thank you, Jilly, who we spoke to earlier. And all of you, please stay safe. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.